Now, there's some adab of ghusl, which you should keep in mind. Ghusl, again, being the legal bath. Number one is, you should not face the qibla when you're performing ghusl. Whereas, this is opposite to wudu. You should not face the qibla when you're performing ghusl. Number two, just like in wudu, or just as in wudu, you should be careful with the amount of water that you use. And number three, it's better to sit when you perform the ghusl than it is to stand. So you want to try to cover yourself as much as possible. Even though you're alone, it's better to actually sit and, you know, be a little bit more shameful in the way you actually perform the ghusl. Now, it's permissible to stand. It's permissible to remove all your clothes and take a shower because you're alone and you're isolated in a room. But it's always better to try to cover your satr as much as possible, to have that degree of internal shame where you feel a little bit uncomfortable when you stand up in the shower, for example. So that's why it's better to sit. And then when you need to stand up to make sure that the ghusl gets done, then you can stand up at that point if need be. So that's the essence of the ghusl. Again, in ghusl you basically have to reach water to, you have to make sure water reaches every single part of the body. So if you're wearing a ring, or you're wearing a watch, or you have an earring, right, that's blocking a hole in the air, or you have nail polish, these are things that prohibit water, or potentially prohibit water, especially, you know, in the case of a ring or an earring or a watch, from reaching the parts that it needs to reach. Then the other way to look at ghusl is to divide it into three types. So ghusl can be divided into three types: farad, wajib, and nafil, which is supererogatory. Actually, not farad, wajib, and nafil. Farad and nafil. There's no wajib. There is wajib and there isn't wajib. I'll explain to you in a minute why I said wajib. So when is it mandatory? When is it mandatory that you have to perform ghusl? Number one, after hayd. So if a woman completes her hayd, completes her monthly cycle, then she must perform ghusl to return to a state of purity. Number two, after nifas. If a woman completes her bleeding after childbirth, then she must perform ghusl in order to return to a state of purity. Now, a lot of times women make a mistake of thinking that nifas is 40 days, right? The bleeding after childbirth is 40 days. It's not 40 days. Its maximum time is 40 days. So a lot of women, they won't be bleeding, but then they'll say, I'm waiting for the 40th day. But that's not the case. You don't wait for the 40th day. What you do have to do is wait till the bleeding ends. And the maximum it can go is 40 days. If it goes beyond 40 days, then the Sharia declares you as excused, and you'll perform wudu for every salah. And we're going to cover the excused person maybe perhaps tomorrow. So keep that in mind for the sisters, that the bleeding after childbirth is not necessarily a full 40 days, but its maximum time is 40 days. Once that bleeding ends, then you must perform ghusl in order to remove yourself from the state of major ritual impurity. And as long as the bleeding continues, no matter how many times you do ghusl, you cannot remove yourself from that state. Bleeding after childbirth or bleeding during the monthly cycle blocks you from attaining a state of purity. Number three, after the insertion of the male private part into a female's private part, with or without, you know, and you don't need release of fluid. Once the head of the male private part actually inserts into the female, that's it. Into the female's private part, you automatically mandate ghusl. And number four is with the release of fluid or semen and excitement. So whether that be because of a dream, or because of touching something, or because of thinking about something, if that is released in a state of excitement, then that mandates ghusl, and you have to perform a ghusl in order to return back to a state of purity. Now, there's one instance where you may not see something, but for example, if somebody wakes up in the morning, they don't remember having any kind of dream of that nature, but they do feel like something was released, and they see something that perhaps could have been released, then it's assumed that you did release something and you need to go and perform ghusl. So it's not necessary that you actually see something, but, you know, like a dream or a vision or something, but if you have proof that you released the fluid, then you have to perform ghusl. The second thing is wajib. Now, I said there was wajib and there wasn't wajib, and the reason is because some ulama feel that it's wajib for a person to when they're accepting Islam. In fact, in one of the books that I often teach as a very, very introductory book, the author says, no, it's farad, it's not even wajib. But actually, Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanawi, who's a very, very famous scholar of India, says that it's mustahab. And when he says something, I throw my hands up and submit. Because his knowledge is just like that, you know. It's just his knowledge is just at that level that I don't even think about it. I'm that confident that when I know he said something, if I've read something and he said it, I don't worry about it again. I don't think about it again. So he says it's mustahab. I think that's the better ruling in this particular bab. So that's why I say that some people say there's a wajib, some people say there's not a wajib. I classify it under mustahab based on the ruling of Mawlana Ashraf Ali Thanawi. Then there's the category of nafil or mustahab, or when is it desirable to make ghusl. Well, number one, for Jummah. For the salah of Jummah, it's desirable that you make ghusl. Now that ghusl for Jummah, there's a debate. Some people say, is it for the salah or is it for the day? There's a debate. Do you have to make the ghusl for the day of Jummah or for the salah of Jummah? And it makes a difference, because should you perform it in that ghusl in the morning when you wake up, or should you perform it right before the salah? And the ulama are of both opinions, but the majority opinion is it's actually for the day. So any time on the day of Jummah you make the ghusl, you'll fulfill the sunnah. Number two, for both Eids. On the day of Eid, it's sunnah. Each of the days of Eid, it's sunnah to perform ghusl. Number three, before you put on the ihram, it's sunnah to perform ghusl. Number four, before you enter Mecca or Medina, sunnah to perform ghusl. Or we can say nafil, you know, like mustahab. That's probably a better term. Number four, or is it five? Well, the next one is visiting the grave of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So when you're going to visit the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it's mustahab to perform ghusl. And after giving a bath to someone who's expired. So if somebody in your family expires and they call upon you to wash the body of the dead, then after you perform that bath, it's actually mustahab for you then to perform your own ghusl after that. The last thing that I want to touch on for today, and then inshallah we'll close this session, is there are two types of fluid which are very similar to seminal fluid and can confuse you and might make you think that you need to perform ghusl. One is called, well, let's not worry about Arabic terms. One is a white fluid which actually comes out before any conjugal interaction. For example, in a state of excitement, there's a little bit of white fluid that comes out before. That does not mandate ghusl. That fluid mandates wudu. That's one thing to keep in mind. The second thing is that sometimes there's a fluid that comes out after. So after one has relations with their spouse, and then what will happen is, you know, you'll go and you'll take a ghusl. So let's say you've actually went to the bathroom, you actually, you know, walked around, got everything ready, you went and made a ghusl, and then 20, 30 minutes later, after you've done, you know, you're doing so many other things, then you feel like there's still a little bit of fluid coming out. So there's still something leaking out over the next 3, 4, or 5 hours. That fluid does not mandate ghusl. That fluid mandates wudu. So you need to perform wudu if that fluid leaks out. And finally, there is fluid that some people have after they actually urinate. When they relieve themselves in the washroom, after the urine, sometimes like a thick white fluid will come out, especially when someone's trying to clean themselves properly, doing istinja. That fluid does not mandate ghusl. That fluid mandates wudu. Keep these in mind, because often they confuse people. So those are the major issues concerning ghusl. And of course, again, as I stated in many instances, this is just an overview. I'm just presenting you with very, very common big concepts that you need to form as an outline in your head. And inshallah, by seeking more knowledge, by finding people who actually have more knowledge, and by spending time with people of knowledge, you'll begin to develop this outline and pick up depth on this outline, and inshallah, then be able to pass that on to others as well. So keep these simple points in mind, and if there's any questions, we can take them now. So I know somebody had a question. Yeah.
In the space of jihad, so you are in the line and you have boots, you still have to take them off.
So the question is regarding a state of, for example, if you're on the battlefield and you're wearing boots, you have to take those boots off before you pray. The answer is, to tell you the truth, I don't know. So I just suggest that you actually put that question to somebody who does know. I can sit here and guess, but that's not what the Sharia is about. So, okay, so then if you've asked the ulama and they've permitted it, then I'm not going to raise any objection to that. That's all I want you to do, actually. That's the ideal scenario.
What if you see the imam, he wipes the rakan back?
Okay, so actually the question is going back to the cotton sock issue. So the question is, what if you see the imam and he wipes over cotton socks? Well, first of all, I know this is a tough issue, but I just don't feel comfortable praying behind an imam that wipes over cotton socks, because it's, you have to have the wudu in order to pray. So I can tell you what I would do. I can't tell you what you should do. If you want a fatwa, then you ask a mufti. But I can tell you my personal view is that I won't pray behind someone who I know for certain, 100%, meaning I've seen them do it. Not I think. I've seen them with my own eyes do it. Then I won't pray behind that person. Either I'll just find another masjid to pray at so I avoid fitna, or I'll just pray by myself. Or if need be, I'll just pray in the jama'ah and then pray, make it up again right afterwards to avoid fitna.
It might be a nice to ask this question in public, but for those of us who have prayed behind imams who we know wipe over socks, should those prayers be repeated?
So the question is, if I've prayed behind somebody who I know wipes over socks, should I repeat those prayers? Again, you've got to ask for a fatwa on that. I don't know the answer to that. That's a very difficult question, and that could potentially be a very weighty question. So it's not easy to throw out an answer. But there are people who are trained, and you can seek them out, and inshallah, they'll give you a righteous answer.